Right now, we are sandwiched emotionally between gratitude and hope. The seasons come on us quickly as the days shorten gradually and the light changes. We anticipate the season, of course, but the pace often takes over, leaving us little time to reflect on the goodness in our lives and to get ready for what we hope will be a season of peace and goodwill. This time in between is precious, for it asks us to wait, breathe in the possible, and build a sense of wonder that we are here, right now, amidst all the world has to offer. If we don't see that simple wonder, it's because we haven't looked for it in this very minute. We're too busy anticipating to pause and see it for what it is. And what it is everything we need. Not more, not less, just enough. Let's not shout out, wait, wait! Wait as the season whizzes by too quickly for us. Let's wait intentionally, peacefully, hopefully, and look around us. The place is right. Here in this sanctuary, away from the pressure of expectations. The company is right, because we are people who gather with love and purpose, and we don't bring the baggage of judgmental opinions with us into this space. We're here together, so let's celebrate that. We have a place to go for comfort and support and energy every week, and we can certainly be grateful for that. We can wait together for what will come this holiday season and in the months to come as we look for a new minister and a new sense of who we are as a community. We can wait patiently because these pews have filled for nearly 150 years of waiting, finding, and doing. It isn't specifically who has sat here or what they individually believe that matters, as much as the connection to a line of energy that has made a difference in this community. That connection waits inside this sanctuary every time someone steps through the door and makes a decision to listen and participate and be together, better together than we are alone. That's what Advent is. We are waiting together for the light and the energy and the hope to touch us this year as it has every year. And we create that magic ourselves. We sustain it in our turn because it matters that we do. It matters right now, and we matter to each other. So let's be grateful we are together and have had much to be thankful for this year. But let us also wait in warm appreciation for each other and all we do together. Look around this room. There is what you wait for every week, the faces of those who will be with you no matter what. We don't wrap a bow around it enough, but it's the best gift you'll get over time and when you need it. Pause. Breathe. Wait and see. May it be so. Our reflection today comes from $100 Holiday by Bill McKibben. I've been called my share of names, but the only one that ever really stung was Grinch. The year that a few friends and I started the $100 Holiday program through our rural churches, Several business-age columnists in the local papers leveled the G word. We were dour do-gooders, they said, bent on taking the joy out of Christmas. And frankly, their charges sounded plausible enough. After all, we were asking our families, our friends, and our church brethren to try and limit the amount of money they spent on the holidays to $100. To celebrate the holiday with a seventh or an eighth of the normal American materialism. There is no question that would mean fewer pop guns and bicycles, roller skates, drums, checkerboards, tricycles, popcorns, and plums. Not to mention PlayStations, camcorders, five irons, and various other obsessions. Perhaps my heart was two sizes too small. So it was with some trepidation that I carefully reread my daughter's well-worn copy of the Seuss classic. Neatly shelved with green eggs and ham, Horton Hears a Who, and all the other secular parables, there on the cover was the Grinch himself. Red eyes gleaming malevolently as he plotted the sack of Whoville. He hated the noise of the kids with their toys. He hated the feast of rare Who roast beast. And most of all, he hated singing, "Why, for 53 years, I put up with it now. I must stop this Christmas from coming." But how? Simple enough, of course, all he had to do was to loot the town of its packages, tinsel, trees, food, and even the logs in the fireplace. Even the crumbs for the mice disappeared back up the chimney. But of course, it didn't work. That Christmas morning, listening from his eyrie for the wailing from Whoville below, the Grinch heard instead the sound of singing. Christmas said come. It came without ribbons, it came without tags, it came without packages, boxes, or bags. After puzzling 3 hours till his puzzler was sore, the Grinch was forced to conclude that Christmas came from no store. And so I breathed a sigh of relief. Not only was I not a Grinch trying to wreck the meaning of Christmas, it was abundantly clear who the Grinches of our culture really are. Those relentless commercial forces who have spent more than a century trying to convince us that Christmas does come from a store or a catalog or a virtual mall on the internet. Every day, but especially in the fall, they try their hardest to turn each Cindy Lou Who into a proper American consumer. They try their best to make sure her Christmas revolves around Sega, or Sony, or Barbie, or Elmo. But Dr. Seuss's message went deeper for me. You see, when we began thinking about $100 holidays, it was mostly out of concern for the environment or for poor people.
think of all that wrapping paper we said, all those batteries, all that plastic. Think of all those needy people who could be helped if we donated our money to them. Instead, think of all those families that went deep into debt trying to have a proper Christmas. All those issues are important. And I've spent much of my life writing about and working on them. But the more we progressed on our little campaign, traveling around our region, having evening meetings at small rural churches like the one I attend, the more we came to understand why people were responding. Indeed, why we had responded to the idea. It wasn't because we wanted a simpler Christmas at all. It was because we wanted a more joyous Christmas. We were feeling cheated, as if the season didn't bring with it the happiness we wanted. We were Christians, and we felt that the story of the birth of the small baby who would become our Savior, a story that should be full of giddy joy, could hardly break through to our hearts amid all the rush and fuss of the season. And many of our friends, Christians or not, felt that too much of the chance for family togetherness was being robbed by the pressures of Christmas busyness and the tensions of gift-giving. Christmas had become something to endure, as least as much as something to enjoy, something to dread, as much as something to look forward to. Instead of an island of peace amid a busy life, it was an island of bustle. The people we were talking to wanted so much more out of Christmas. More music, more companionship, more contemplation, more time outdoors, more love. And they realized that to get it, they needed less of some other things. Not so many gifts, not so many obligatory parties, and not so much hustle. Once, after an evening program filled with carol singing and the kids' stories and general proselytizing for the idea of a simpler Christmas, one woman said to me, "Thank you for giving me permission to celebrate Christmas the way I've always wanted to." What she meant, I decided, was that the message from the pulpit allowed her to stand up to the pressures of the advertisers, of the glossy magazines and their endless decorating tips, to stand up to the voice that had been planted in the back of her head that told her what Christmas should be. What she meant, too, was that by giving her a target, a $100 Christmas, our small campaign had provided her with an anchor to hold her fast amid the gale of the holiday. Christmas, our small campaign, gave her an anchor to hold her fast against the commercialism. There's nothing magic about $100. Truth be told, I chose the name because it sounded good with holiday. And obviously, big families may decide to spend more than $100, and small ones may be happier spending less. But the $100 goal seemed to work well as a kind of check, a way of saying that your commitment to a better Christmas goes beyond merely complaining or telling yourself that next year it will be different. None of this means that changing your Christmas patterns will be simple. It may cause tensions with other members of your extended family or with kids who have grown up thinking that Christmas morning is a loot fest. It may take you years to build down to a $100 holiday, years of talking and writing to your near and dear. In an obsessively commercial society, it will always seem a little odd to many. but it will be worth it. I'm looking forward to Christmas, secure in the knowledge that it really will be a time of calm and happiness, a season to linger in and not get through, a time to celebrate the birth of the Savior. This is my stab at a way to think about Christmas in our place and time. Christmas, this burst of light at the darkest season of the year, is too precious to surrender to the various Grinches. It's time to build Whovilles in our family, our communities, and our nation.